and welcome to Twitchutting. It's the comedy show all about what happened this week in history. Now, according to Marge Simpson, history is like a fun fair, except instead of rides, there are dates to remember. But what does Marge Simpson know? She is just a drawing, the idiot. Still better than me, I am merely a disembodied voice. I dream of the day I might be given a two-dimensional body to inhabit. Perhaps you could draw me something as you listen to this at home and jiggle it around whilst I speak. Maybe get the kids to have a go. I don't look like that, you idiot. But Twitchutting proves that history is a fun fair full of exciting rides. Dare you board the Titanic water slide, fraught with danger? You might end up having to snog sprout-faced actor Leonardo DiCaprio. Or test your skill on one of our stalls. Throw three ice picks into Trotsky and you win a giant, cuddly Stalinist bear. Look over there, it's Charles Manson's Helter Skelter. Probably best to avoid that. And if history is a fun fair, then I, Richard Herring, am the bloke who runs the Dodgems and will let you on for free if you allow me to fill you up behind the candy floss stall. The queue starts here, but you must be taller than this sign to get on. I'm not a pervert. If only Michael Jackson had had one of those at Neverland, then maybe things would have been so different. But who wants to come along? Yay! Terrific, you wonderful slags. And providing the musical accompaniment on the ever-spinning carousel of life are Christian Riley and the Diet of Worms.
That was then, this is now. All the fun of the fair will leave you feeling cold, wet and sick, and feeling cheated out of all of your money.
Thanks, Christ. So, it seems there was... there was something I was meant to do this week, but I can't quite recall what it was.
I don't know what it might be.
Oh, it's weird. I feel like I've been looking forward to it all week, really excited, and now it's slipped my mind.
Well, you are pretty old.
Hey, I'm only 40, Christ. God, that is old, isn't it? I can't believe I'm 40. I still feel like I'm 20, unless I'm walking up some stairs.
Don't worry. You're only as old as the woman you feel.
Yeah, I don't have a girlfriend, though, so that makes me logically nothing years old, standing outside of time like a Doctor Who.
You are married to TV's Emma Kennedy. How old is she?
She's 40 as well, so that doesn't really help. But I don't feel her. It's not that kind of marriage. Hold on, the thing I've forgotten, it was something to do with Emma.
You don't look 40, Rich.
Are you flirting with me, Christ?
No, I'm just trying to change the subject.
Well, it's a problem getting older for me, though, Christ, because I've spent my whole career playing this character who's all kind of childish and puerile, an eternal teenager. Now when I look in the mirror, I see this wrinkled, grey-haired, toad-faced old gonk staring back at me. I don't know if I can carry on with the puerile shtick. If I do, I'm in danger of turning into the English wee Jimmy Cranky, though I'd never marry my own brother. I don't think Scotland should be allowed independence until they've sorted out their archaic marital laws. But anyway, talking of puerility, how about this? On the 11th of January, 1787, William Herschel, the man who discovered Uranus... pathetic. ..spotted two moons of that planet, which he called Oberon and Titania. So, Titania goes around Uranus. And Oberon is an anagram of Obona as well. Do you think that's just a coincidence that the heavenly bodies discovered by Herschel got such dirty names? How did he end up calling a planet Uranus? There really are only two possibilities. Fellow astronomers, it's my pleasure to announce that today, when I was looking through my telescope, I discovered a new planet. I've decided to call it Uranus. What is it?
Good one, William. I like it.
What are you going to call it, really?
Uranus. I'm calling it Uranus. What's wrong with that?
Your what?
Anus. Uranus. Is there some kind of problem?
No. So if I look through your telescope, I can see Uranus, Professor Herschel.
Yes, of course.
I have heard that on certain occasions, Uranus is visible to the naked eye.
Yeah, that's right.
I see your horoscope today that Mars is in conjunction with your anus.
Oh, really? That's the point. Look, what's going on here? Have I got something hanging from my nose? He either did it by accident, or possibility two, he knew exactly what he was doing. Imagine exactly the same scene. Great news, fellow astronomers. When looking through my telescope today, I discovered a new planet. I've decided to call it my gigantic knob. Do you see, it sounds a bit like my gigantic knob. Do you get it?
Professor Herschel, leave the Royal College of Astronomy immediately.
No sense of humour. Honestly, it would have made generations of schoolboys so very happy. Uranus, then. It has to be one of the two. Either he knew what he was doing or he didn't. And in their own ways, both choices are as funny as each other. Of course, you might write in to say that actually there is a third possibility, which is that Herschel originally named the planet Georgium Sidus in honour of his patron George III, and it was only later in the 19th century that it was renamed after the Greek god of the heavens by the astronomer Johann Elert Bode, who was German and thus presumably unaware of the pun in the English language. And in any case, you might add, it's actually pronounced Uranus, so your joke doesn't work. And I'd be forced to admit you were right, and I've behaved very childishly and have wasted your time. But what you can't see, dear listener, is that at this precise moment, I am flicking the V's at you. So I am still best.
That was then, this is now. Putting the S in astronomy.
Sad news for fans of Iceland and people whose surname is nearly the same as their first name. When last year, on 7th of January, TV legend Magnus Magnusson died. He'd started, so it was inevitable, I suppose, that one day he would finish. Everyone loved Magnus Magnusson, one of the great institutions of 20th century broadcasting. And our next guest was lucky enough to know Magnus Magnusson personally. It's the man who's been operating the end-of-round buzzer on Mastermind since 1972. It's Ian Norman. Thanks for coming along to share your memories of Magnus Magnusson, Ian.
Oh, I'm delighted to get the chance, Richard Herring.
So you're in charge of the buzzer at the end of each round.
Yes. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. That was me.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Yes, that's what I was in control of. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
But on the show, it's an actual buzzer, not you just saying ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Well, most of the time it is a buzzer, but sometimes, if the occasion calls for it, say the buzzer malfunctions, I can do it vocally. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Has that ever happened?
No, but I'm ready for it.
I see, and what are your other duties on the show?
Well, no other duties. It's quite enough responsibility to be in charge of the... I can assure you, it is a full-time job.
And have you ever worked on any other shows we might have heard of?
No, just Mastermind, Richard Herring, and just... It is an important post, and I had no time to take any other work.
All right, calm down, fair enough. It must have been marvellous to work with Magnus Magnusson, though, such a lovable man.
Not at all, Richard Herring. I hated Magnus Magnusson and was delighted when he died.
What? She can't...
No. To me, he was worse than Hitler and Pol Pot combined.
You can't say that. Magnus Magnusson was a wonderful man. This is meant to be a tribute. What was there not to like about him?
He betrayed his country, and I can never forgive him for that.
What do you mean?
As you probably know, Richard Herring, Magnus Magnusson, as he wanted to be known, was born in Iceland, but grew up in Scotland.
Yes, every schoolboy in the country knows that.
And Magnus's father was, of course, Sigurstein Magnusson. I suspect you've already anticipated the reason for my fury.
No.
Well, I'd have thought it was pretty obvious. Under Icelandic naming conventions, Magnus Magnusson's name should have been Magnus Sigursteinsson, Magnus, son of Sigurstein. But his family adopted Scottish naming conventions and used his father's patronymic. He betrayed his homeland, and I can never forgive him that.
Isn't it rather touching he used the conventions of his adopted country that he grew up in?
Nope.
Surely you should be blaming his dad, Sigurstein Magnusson, not Magnus Magnusson.
Nope. It's Magnus Magnusson's fault, and I made him pay for it.
How?
Because I was in charge of the buzzer, wasn't I? And over the course of the 25 years that Magnus Magnusson presented the show, I made his life a living hell. Because I always waited till Magnus Magnusson had started asking a question before I buzzed. Which meant Magnus Magnusson had to go, I started, so I'll finish. I was taking the piss out of old Magnus Magnusson, I'll tell you that.
I don't see how.
I'm not stupid, Richard Herring. Just because my only job for the last 30-odd years has been to ring a buzzer.
I know how the buzzer goes.
When I rang the buzzer.
We stopped doing the buzzer. I
knew that Magnus Magnusson had got to finish the question anyway. Realistically, I might as well have waited until Magnus Magnusson had actually finished the question before going... Save Magnus Magnusson going, I've started, so I'll finish. But I always did it in the middle of a question, subtly undermining him, making him pay for his incorrect name.
I don't think Magnus Magnusson really minded.
Yeah, he didn't look like he minded Richard Herring. He kept all cool and Icelandic, but inside he was furious. After the show, he'd storm up to me and go, "Look, bother bloke, you thought I'd started the question, so why didn't you just wait till I finished, eh? Then I wouldn't have to keep on saying I started till I finished it, just get to my talk, all right? So stop it." And every time I would say, "Oh, I'm sorry, Magnus Magnusson, I won't do it again." But secretly, I knew I was going to, because I wanted to make Magnus Magnusson look stupid. Because Magnus Magnusson thought he was it, up there in his jacket and tie, asking the questions, knowing all the answers. But I was letting Magnus Magnusson know that without me on the buzzer, that Magnus Magnusson was nothing. I stopped him getting too big for his breeches. Now I'm doing the same for old Johnny Humphreys.
He seems lovely.
He isn't. Johnny Humphreys is worse than Fred West and Jeffrey Dahmer combined. I hate John Humphreys, Richard Herring. I hate all humanity, but I'll show them with my buzzer. You'll all be made to pay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Norman, a man slowly driven mad by having nothing to do but press a buzzer.
Don't you dare mock me!
That was then, this is now, presented by a man whose career had finished before it started.
On the 10th of January 1994, Lorena Bobbitt went on trial. The mere mention of her name has caused every man in this room to inadvertently, instinctively cross his legs. The year before, her husband John Wayne Bobbitt got drunk, allegedly forced his wife to have sex with him, and then fell asleep. Lorena took spectacular revenge by cutting off her husband's penis with an 8-inch carving knife. Then she drove off with it in her car and threw it out of the window. Because, you know, just cutting it off wasn't really punishment enough, but... She should be chastised for this. The indiscriminate fly-tipping of penises can encourage rats. Ladies of Britain, please dispose of your husband's dismembered genitalia in a more hygienic fashion. If you learn nothing else from this show, please let it be that. Luckily for John Wayne Bobbitt, the penis was found and reattached by a Dr. David Berman, who genuinely quips on his website, "I guess you could call it pro bono work." The millionaire idiot. Weirdly, this whole awful scenario made stars of both participants. Lorena became a hero to many women as a symbol of what could happen to men if they abused or even just slightly annoyed their wives. It's one way to make sure they remember to put the toilet seat down, girls, that the threat of that. And if you carry it out, then they'll have to put the toilet seat down anyway. John became a celebrity, appearing in a couple of porn films before he was imprisoned for beating up his second wife. Does this man never learn? Doesn't he remember what happened the last time he did that? For me, Lorena's mistake was to throw the penis out of the car in a place where it could be found. She should have taken a leaf out of the book of the wife of Lin Yuk Sang, who, when she found out her husband was cheating on her, and this is completely true, she cut off his penis with a pair of scissors, and this is the genius part, flushed it down the toilet. There's no way the police were going to search for that. Imagine them wading through the sewers in the dark. "I've found it." "Oh, no, another false alarm." Now it's time to welcome back our house band, Christian Riley and the Diet of Worms.
So, on the 11th of January 1992, Paul Simon became the first international star to perform in South Africa after a UN cultural boycott. It was music and musicians that showed us the way in the struggle against apartheid. Who can forget this apartheid-busting classic?
Ivory and ivory would be a pretty boring bunch of piano keys. The white notes need the black notes in between. That's the only way we can play a perfect melody. Household should have a black household next door, apart from every third and seventh one, just to be accurate. There should be giant hammers fixed to the back of each house that strike massive piano wires under the ground, so that when the families all jump up and down in a special sequence, every man, woman and child can learn to play
chopsticks. And baby, that tune that Tom Hanks plays in that movie, where he's a little kid trapped in a grown man's body. Ooh, come to think of it, those tunes don't use any black keys, so the black guys could just sit back and enjoy the melody. Or if they joined in on the offbeats, the resulting tune would sound a little jazz funky. Is that appropriate or racist? I don't know anymore. Ooh. Ivory and ebony, black people and white people bouncing in harmony, doesn't solve the problem of all these Chinese immigrants coming over here and nicking all of our jobs. They don't fit my new world order. They will have to be deported. And people with freckles and psoriasis. Ooh, only pure black or white people in my piano-based utopia. Ooh.
Christian Reilly and the Diet of Worms there. The 10th of January 1869 was the birthday of my hero Grigori Rasputin, the hard-drinking, hard-loving, future-predicting, insane monk. What's not to like? According to the historians Boney M., he wasn't only Russia's greatest love machine, he was also the lover of the Russian Queen. And remember, in 1916, it wasn't so easy to shag a member of the royal family. Mind you, Boney M. also claimed that to the Moscow chicks, Rasputin was such a lovely dear, despite the fact he never really spent any time in Moscow, as the capital of Russia at the time was St. Petersburg. I don't want to knock Boney M., but many historians now refuse to use them as a source. Rasputin has been seen in many different ways. Lionel Cohen called him an odious, licentious, hypnotically gifted monk. Alex de Jong said he personified the dangers of power without responsibility. And in Nicholas and Alexandra, mad actor Tom Baker portrayed him as a wide-eyed, bellowing, jelly-baby-eating time traveller. As always. Rasputin's death has become a thing of legend. His assassins, Prince Felix Yusupov and nobleman Pushkevich, supposedly found him very difficult to do away with. Most of the accounts of his invincibility are clearly fabricated. Here's what really happened.
That was then, this is now. What really happened?
Another cake, Grigori?
Oh, yes, please. And by the way, my friends call me Rara. Rara Rasputin.
You are quite an amazing man, Rara.
Indeed I am, Fifi. I am the lover of the Russian Queen, Russia's greatest love machine, a cat that really is gone. It's a shame how I carry on, to be quite honest. What is more, I'm a brown girl in the ring.
Yes. Are you feeling okay?
Brilliant, thank you. These cakes are really perking me up.
Damn it! Excuse me a minute. I don't understand it, Perishkovich. I have fed Rasputin cakes laced with enough cyanide to kill a horse, and yet he is still alive.
Then you have no option but to shoot him dead.
Oh, hello, Felix. Got any more of those cakes? They're really Moorish.
No, Rasputin, and you would do well to look at that cross and say a prayer.
What the...
See, Felix, I believe he is dead now.
A ghost!
Quick, the machine gun.
Your earth bullets cannot harm me.
Oh, no, he's getting away. Give him a Chinese burn.
Your earth Chinese burns cannot harm me. Ow!
He is indestructible. Release the dogs.
They will rip him apart.
He is using his hypnotic powers to make the dogs think they are chickens.
Oh, he would have made a fortune on the Stag Night circuit. Oh, how shall we kill him?
I have an idea.
The loud siren startled him, Perishkovich, but he is still alive.
Well, I don't think he'll survive this.
Bullseye! Now!
now he is dead.
Russia is saved from his demonic evil. The Tsars will rule for 1,000 years and...
Oh, for crying out loud. Oh, he's rising from the flames. He's just a skeleton. It's like that bit at the end of Terminator, I expect.
Right, don't worry. I'll dispatch him with this chainsaw.
He is in 1,000 pieces. Surely now his reign of terror is...
Oh, the tiny pieces of the crazed cleric have reformed to create 12 tiny Rasputins. Like in The Sorcerer's Apprentice, I expect.
Oh, we've made things worse, not better. I can't really see any way out of this now. Oh, hold on. Oh, I beg your pardon, tiny Rasputins. I sneeze right on you and...
Wait, the tiny Rasputins.
The Rasputins are dead! Killed by the common cold, like in War of the Worlds, I expect. Oh, actually, has that been written yet?
Yeah, that was published in 1898.
Oh, so that one does work. Yeah. Oh, good.
And that's what really happened.
That was then, this is now.
What really happened?
Now, will you please welcome back my wife, Morticia Adams herself. It's TV's Emma Kennedy.
Yay! Hello. Hello, it's me, TV's Emma Kennedy, from several episodes of I Love the 1980s.
And do you love the 1980s, Emma?
No, I hate the 1980s. I pretended to love them and in doing so earned a two-figure sum. Take that, 1980s!
You got them. So which of your moribund formats are you going to subject us to this week, my sweet wife?
Well, it's time for another of the ever-popular TV's Emma Kennedy's Births, Deaths and Marriages with me, TV's Emma Kennedy.
Those aren't ever popular, Emma. Those were never popular. They're simply fillers we put into the show in case we don't have enough stuff to fill the half hour.
No, they are popular. Cheer if you like my birth, deaths and marriages thing, kids.
Yay! All right, and boo if you think that and everything that TV's Emma Kennedy does is completely useless.
People have spoken.
I hold no truck with democracy, Emma Kennedy. Were the majority right when they elected to crucify Jesus? Actually, that wasn't a very good example. Get on with it.
It's time to find out who got wed, bred or dead with TV's Emma Kennedy.
That's right, it's TV Emma Kennedy's Birth, Deaths and Marriages, so let's find out who tied the knot, who had the knot tied in their umbilical cord, and who tied the knot on the noose this week. And the 6th January saw a very happy 2008th birthday to little baby Jesus Christ. Yes, you heard me right, the 6th of January. Because until 548 AD, the Church of Jerusalem observed the birth of the Messiah on this date, and they should know. Do you know, I've always wondered what happened to the gold they were given. Surely to a humble biblical family like the Christs, that would have been the equivalent of a rollover lottery win. Yet they still put their son in an animal trough. With all that money, you'd think Joseph would have bought him a nice swanky one from Pret a Manger. What am I like? But all too soon, the baby Jesus was nailed up onto a tree until it was dead. Let's look at one of the other once living people who suddenly found themselves no longer living this week. On 6 January 1796, Catherine the Great of Russia died. Rumours circulated that the Empress was crushed to death by a horse that had been suspended above her when her harness broke. Still, she wouldn't be the last royal to have a horse face looming over them in the bedroom. Would she, Prince Charles? Bang! Yeah, I'm talking about Camilla. Gotcha! 2 for 2! Anywho, who cares about some old queen dying when history is festooned with living people conjoining in holy matrimony? And on 6 January 1540, wedding cake enthusiast Henry VIII married wife number 4, the Anne of Cleves. But the marriage lasted only 6 months and was unconsummated because Henry thought Anne was a right minger, christening her the Flanders Mare. At least there's one royal who was ashamed to be married to a horse-faced woman. Hey, Prince Charles! Got you again! I'm on fire!
Stop this! Stop
the music. What's stop this, Emma? What is wrong with you? Why do you have this vendetta against Camilla Parker Bowles?
She's trying to replace Lady Di. I mean, how dare she? She's nothing compared to Lady Di.
She isn't. She's just trying to live her life. Let Charles and Camilla be. They're in love. Let them have some happiness and keep your cheap, hackneyed, mawkish barbs to yourself.
I'm not mawkish.
You are. You're not the Flanders mare. You're the Hitchin Mork.
Hitchin Mork? That's a bit rubbish.
It's getting harder to come up with. It's been three series now. We're running it into the ground, if we're honest. Mm. Anyway, you've made a mistake, TV's Emma Kennedy. A fatal mistake. Because by talking about Henry VIII, you've reminded me of the thing I'd forgotten to do this week. It is the beheading of you.
Oh, no, I didn't think it through.
Yeah. Bring on the executioner.
Look, you don't have to do this, Richard Keith.
I do. I promise my listeners a senseless murder and I will not let them down.
But it's nearly the end of the show. What, you could just postpone the execution to next week and then create a cliffhanger.
No, I'm not falling for that again. That's what you said last week and it'll never happen. Bring the mawkish termagant forwards.
So, but you can't do this, Richard Keith.
Just watch me, though, admittedly. You'll have to do some of the watching from inside that basket down there. Executioner.
Yes, sir.
Raise your chopper. Come on, don't be so childish. This is a serious moment.
Sorry, that always gets me.
Get on with it.
No, you can't kill me, Richard Keith, for I am with child.
What do you mean?
I am pregnant with your child. I'm going to have your baby.
You're joking.
I'm serious, like rabies.
Executioner, hold your chopper.
Sorry. You should just call it an axe and then we wouldn't have these problems.
You're pregnant. This could be the son I've always wanted to carry on my line. He can do sketch-based historical comedy based on what happened this week in history once I am gone. A son! A son! Finally, I have a son! In your face, Christian Riley. Not the only fertile one, are you? Check on, you amateur!
Yes, well done. I am delighted for you.
Yes, it is good news, isn't it?
Hold on just one cotton-picking minute. How can it be my son? We've never consummated our marriage.
It's a miracle.
Oh, you mean like a virgin birth?
Well, not exactly, but
yeah,
similar.
I think as long as one of you is a virgin, Rich, then still technically it counts, so you're okay.
Okay, yeah. Great. So my son's like the new Jesus. That's the best possible, isn't it?
Yeah, well done. You know, you're the father of what might be the new Jesus. We should call him Christian after his faith.
Good idea.
Good idea.
Hold on, something doesn't add up.
I don't mean to be funny, not on this show, but I have been contracted to do an execution and legally I have to kill someone before the show ends.
That's true. People have tuned in expecting a death, so we've promised it and the BBC has to be honest now. So what? One of us has to go. So who out of everyone in this programme is a betraying, awful person and deserves to die, would you say, Christ?
I don't know.
Well, I do. Bring forward Ian Norman, the buzzer bloke from Mastermind.
No, what's going on? Leave me alone. You can't do this.
You dared to malign Magnus Magnusson, and if that isn't a capital offence, it should be. I hope you're listening, Westminster. Executioner, it's time for head, for it to come off.
No, that's not funny. It's just contrived.
Sorry.
You can't kill me. Who will go...
That's for you, Magnus Magnusson. We miss you. We've started, now we're finished.
That was then, this is now. It's written and performed by Richard Herring, Per Ring, TV's Emma Kennedy, Dan Tetzel, Titzel, and Danny Robbins. Rubbings, get it? The songs and music were all done by Christian Riley and The Diet of Worms, who were Damien Caldwell, Martin Kane, Marty Kane, and Charlie Round-Turner. Round-Turner. It was produced by Liz Anthony, and it's a Cellar Door production for BBC Radio 2, number 2.